Yeah, huge thanks to Stevie there, and welcome along to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Go Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour, jumping straight into things. And Munster currently leads Scarlett 7 points to nil away from home, while the game is still on, still in its relatively early stages, rather. We're going to hear the pre-game press conference with new Munster head coach, Clayton McMillan.
How are you set for your first proper game, your first competitive game? You've had your couple of friendlies, you've had a good long pre-season. Are you looking forward to just getting this season going now?
Yeah, absolutely. A huge amount of excitement in the group to go out there and play a competitive match against Scarlets. We've really enjoyed our pre-season. I think a lot's been sort of documented. It's been hard. We've done things a little bit different. But we feel like we've landed in a good place. Probably like every coach and every team, you always want another training or another session or another week to prepare yourselves, but everyone's in the same boat, and I guess we'll find out where we're at on Saturday.
In the last three seasons, poor starts have kind of been a trait of Munster's URC campaigns the last 3 years. Obviously, you weren't responsible for those, but how important is it for the group to get a big start in this league and not have to go chasing things later on in the campaign?
Yeah, I think it's very important. It's been a sort of focal point of our preseason, why we've done what we've done through the preseason. We've worked hard to make sure that we are physically, technically, tactically ready to enter the season in the best possible position. But that's really only achieved if you get all your best bodies playing. So another part of our preseason has been trying to ensure that our guys are available first. Best form of selection is availability. So a lot of what we've done has been around trying to get us rugby ready, but also changing things up and being a little smarter around how we operate to give ourselves the best chance of having most of our bodies available to us, which I think will certainly help with the consistency of performance that potentially hasn't been there, particularly at the front end of the season the last few years.
And just finally for me, you've some of your international players in the starting 15, you've some on the bench. Is the plan in these first couple of games as a new coach to try give as many people an opportunity as possible and give everyone a chance to kind of stake their claim for a place in the team?
Yes, we've managed to achieve that somewhat through the preseason. The preseason games, and then to be 100% transparent and honest, is we probably come into the preseason with a predetermined, we've come to the conclusion that the guys that have been here for the duration of the preseason are actually more ready to play rugby, given that the internationals came in a little bit later, and so we've largely rewarded performance through the preseason to those that have been here for the balance of that preseason, knowing that, having that international experience and X factor coming off the bench is really a luxurious position to be in, and we hope that they'll come off and be in a position to finish the job for us. There's obviously a few caveats around that. John Hodnett, who's injured, meant that we've gone for experience specialist 7 and Alex Kendallen, and obviously Craig Casey is the captain. So in those two instances, that theory hasn't quite played out, but it was certainly our intention to do that.
Great stuff. Good luck this week, Clayton.
Thank you.
Hi, Clayton. How's it going? Tom here from Tregear Kings. How are you doing?
Good, thanks, Tom.
Scarlett's up first. What have you noticed about Scarlett's in the build-up to the game? Is there anything in particular that you're kind of wary of heading into this one on Saturday?
We're wary of every opposition that we come up against. The Scarlett's, I think it's been well documented again and certainly recognised by the group in here that they finished the season really well, and there's a lot of, they'll be looking to take some of that momentum into the start of this season. They've recruited pretty well. They're obviously playing at home, and we're well aware of the desperation that they'll play with given the situation that's unfolding in Wales. So a really dangerous team that we have the utmost respect for.
It's fantastic to see Conor Bartley get an opportunity off the bench as well. How impressed have you been with Conor Bartley over the pre-season since you've been here?
Good. Yeah, I think he started off a little bit slow, quite a lengthy injury over the last sort of rugby season, but people have always spoken highly of his ability, particularly at scrimmaging. And in the last sort of 6 or 7 weeks, he's really made some forward strides, and you know, we saw evidence of his ability, particularly around scrimmaging through the preseason games. And with the injury to John Ryan, he's made the decision really easy to go with him and given him opportunity. So it's a just reward for all of the effort that he's put in, and you know, he's done it the hard way. He's not he's no spring chicken, but there's a lot of advantages around having somebody that's got that man strength and been in any number of scrums, and we hope that serves him well on the weekend.
Finally for me, I watched an Access Munster. You were talking about yourself and Brad Mayo, how you had a shortened enough pre-season where it was a very tight block. I think it was 12 weeks, I think he said, on that episode. Did you get pretty much everything you wanted to get done on that track? I know there's a big focus on set piece. How happy are you with the path of the pre-season, I suppose?
I think I probably answered that early on. Like, a big focus for us was having, I guess we use the terminology, available, fit and effective. So a big part of our planning was around having as many bodies available at the start line. And so that meant digesting a lot of the good and the bad that had happened over the last 3 years, trying to find, you know, some low-hanging fruit that might help us get to a position at the start of the season where we actually have more bodies available. But you know, one way you can do that is wrap everyone in cotton wool, and that's not actually going to prepare you too well for the season. So we still have to be fit, and we've got to be effective in our role. If we're judging ourselves on those things, you know, I think there's a lot of evidence internally that we've ticked those boxes. But you never quite know until, you know, you play a competition game, you find out where you're actually at. So I've got no doubt we'll learn a little bit about ourselves on the weekend, but it'll be a good line in the sand that we'll grow from.
Great stuff. Thanks very much.
No worries.
Just wondering, what are the kind of underlying principles you want from this team? I know it's early in your season, but what are the things you want the players to stand for your Munster team as you set out your stall?
I think a big part is really just consistency of performance. And what I talked about before in terms of having your best bodies available certainly helps, but you know, there's a whole lot that goes into that, and I think if the team has been guilty of anything over the last couple of years, is being able to perform on the big stage with backs against the wall and then seemingly having a really poor performance the next week. And I think if we want to be the team that we aspire to be, then just having a consistency of performance is a great starting point. I just think that the game is pretty simple and sometimes, you know, made complicated by coaches. So set piece, winning the territorial battle, you know, valuing your position, converting pressure into points, those things, no matter where you are in the world, still hold a team in pretty good stead. And, you know, that's what we'll be looking to do on the weekend.
And is your expectation that you'll be able to start with that consistency, or do you think it will be, like, should supporters be ready for a bit of a bedding in process, a bit of time to get those principles in place, or do you think you've done enough in this time with the group of players you have that you can hit the ground running and get that from the off?
Oh, I'd certainly like to think so. You know, I'm not giving myself or the team any outs around, you know, we've lost some experience or we haven't had long enough in the preseason. Like, you know, I think we've had enough time, and you know, I think we've shown enough in our preseason games to show that we're ready, as ready as we can be. We're not the finished product. Like, every team's going to grow and learn from each week, and you know, like, you want to be playing your best rugby at the back end of the season, not at the front end, but you want your starting point to be, you know, higher than where you were the previous season. So again, that's the expectation, that's what we're aspiring to do, and we'll be able to answer that on Monday morning.
Yeah, the latest from that one is Munster 13 to the Scarlets 0. Munster's opener in the URC going well for them so far. Casey Troy opens up, and JJ Hanrahan converting everything else. Earlier in the week, Cork Curling was hit big time by the news of Patrick Horgan's retirement. The greatest of all time never to win an All-Ireland medal debate has well and truly been settled. One of Cork's greatest ever servants bids farewell. A huge thanks to Patrick Horgan for everything he's done for the Cork jersey, from all of us here on Red FM and the Big Red Bench. But to talk about it, here's Cork legend and Glen Rovers boss, Tomás Mulcahy.
All right, delighted to be joined on the line by a man who knows Patrick Horgan more than most, his clubmate, Mr. Tomás Mulcahy. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. I'm very good, Rory. Yeah.
First off, were you surprised by Patrick's announcement?
Yeah, probably a little bit, to be honest with you, a little bit, because there's a lot of hurling still going on. Look, he only played last Friday night with Glen Rovers, and he was just incredible. And kind of play, people were kind of saying, geez, he's still going really, really well, right? You know, and his performance at the club since our Ireland final day has been an absolute joy to watch. He has played unbelievably well in his position up front. And no, I didn't expect this, you know. You kind of, this time of the year, you're still in hurling season, September. Do you hear too many retirements at this stage? Maybe people leave it going out a couple of weeks before they take stock. But look, there's one thing, Rory, that I'm really, really happy with, is that it's come from himself, that he's made that choice himself. I'm sure he's sat back long and hard and thought about this, and I'm just delighted, because I don't think there would have been anything worse than Patrick Horgan after 18 years being involved to be kind of told he has to go, or be dropped from a selection committee, or be pushed aside, or go back into training and doesn't get any opportunity going forward. Because I don't think he deserved that for himself, as a man, as a person, as a character, and what he's achieved under the red jersey for Cork GAA.
He didn't come to you as like his club manager saying, look, I'm going to announce my retirement or anything like that and look for your advice?
No, he didn't. And like, I'd be happy with that as well, because a lot of people have asked me that question over the last number of weeks, even last year, maybe the year before. People have asked me that question to say, he's finished, what's Hoggy going to do, he needs to go. And I kept throwing it back to people and say that will be Patrick's decision himself, and I'm just glad that's the way it panned out. And he's very forthright in his statement himself, in terms of remembering those, all the players he played under, all those that managed him, and the great managers, and then the Cork followers that followed him so greatly over the years. And look, it's a sad day in one sense yesterday, but I think also a time for celebration, remembering what he achieved and what he has done for Cork hurling. And as a person himself, I mean, I couldn't never fought the man. I couldn't meet any nicer. I couldn't meet a more obliging man. I've seen the effect in terms of losing our Ireland finals with him. I see the effect of what the Ireland final this year brought, Rory, and like, they weren't in a great place for two or three weeks after that, you know. And my job as club manager was trying to get him back on the right footing, and like, this guy was tremendous for us in the last couple of weeks. So it shows the character, take the hurling aside, the person himself and what hurling means to him. It just meant so much in his life.
Talk to me about Patrick Horgan coming up through the ranks of Glen Rovers. When would you have become first aware of him, I suppose, and the talent that he possessed at the club?
Yeah, look, I mean, we always pride ourselves with our underage structure. We always pride ourselves in terms of what we call the street leagues, to traditional street leagues. You're called after famous names in the Glen. You're called after famous places around Blackpool. And Patrick became part of that as well. He only lived over the road from Glen Rovers Club. His father was very much involved in underage at adult level. So I think it was a natural progression on that side of it. But kind of, when I got to kind of see Patrick in action, I think maybe kind of under 12s, under 13s, then going to Fáil na Gael, right, which was the All-Ireland competition. And I had a son playing in that myself with Patrick, Steve MacDonald, some Conor Doris, some guys that went on to play unbelievable stuff with Glen Rovers. And he came through the ranks, and they won in a tournament in Belfast under stewardship of Finbar O'Neill, and I think Ian Lynham was involved. And there was you could see at the time, this guy, he was becoming the talk of the place in Belfast, and the talent that he was showing. Finally was in Casement Park, and he was really, really good. And like, you know, people coming from Castlegar and Galway, there was other teams that we met along the way, and they were saying, who is this young lad? Who is this young lad? And When you look at him and you say to yourself, what made him stand out from underage level? He went on to win under 16, he won Premier Minors, he won under 21 counties, and then he went on, obviously, in 2015 and 16 to win senior counties with the Glen as well. So, I mean, you always knew, look, there was a serious talent there. But outside of that, we've heard so much people talk about this word potential, and there's a lot of players out there with potential that never fulfill that, right? This guy had abundance of potential, but he worked so hard in it. His work ethic was just roaring. It was just incredible. I couldn't believe some of the stuff Patrick was getting up to, being honest with you, in terms of training. And probably don't know the half of behind the scenes in terms of where he's at. I mean, they say you eat, sleep and drink hardly, or it's drink sport, right? He was one of those guys, yeah. Incredible.
Yeah, John Myler was on Off the Ball this morning, and he was saying that when he was Cork boss, Patrick Horgan would be there at 5 o'clock before training, just taking freeze. And that was the side of Patrick Horgan that the public didn't see, was all that hard work. People just saw Patrick Horgan turn up and rattle over these freeze with all that hard work that went on behind it. And Myler was saying he didn't think he'd seen a player work so hard in training as Patrick Horgan did it. I imagine it's the same. He did it the same for Glen Rovers as he did for Cork, just put in all that work.
Yeah, but look, I mean, he probably, in terms of where I saw him, and like we're talking about Cork now, because I'm hoping, and Glen Rovers are all hoping, that this is the end of the road for Patrick Cork and Glen Rovers, that he comes back to us now and he has another 4 or 5 years if he wants to be manning that full forward line or wherever he wants to play, because he's such a serious talent, and that he can come back and enjoy it, right? Because I've seen him in action, right? Not alone in terms of that early 5 o'clock, right? I mean, I was in Páirc Uí recently at a meeting with the Cork County Board below there, and it was 4:20 I arrived, and I could see Patrick's car was there. Now, I think they weren't training at about 6:30, 7 o'clock. But Patrick had arrived. He does his own pre kind of training routine in terms of getting some prep, getting his rub, getting his ankles strapped. And that all takes a bit of time, and then he's warm up, and then he's out with his bag of balls, freeze, and he's practicing ahead of everybody else, you know. And like, I seen that coming to the Glen as well, right? And he kind of set the standard for the standard that he had set for himself, you know. If you're training at 7 o'clock, you could be guaranteed 5 to 6, 6 o'clock, 5 past 6. There's Patrick Horgan's car rolls in, and he's out and doing the same routine. And you know what? Everybody has started taking notice. Jesus, Hoggy's here early. I need to come early, right? You know? And but from an intercounty scene, it's totally different, because this dedication is just huge, right? I mean, you're talking about your strength and conditioning, where they're at. I mean, their winter programs that they go through, then into the summer months. And his dedication was never questioned, right? He wasn't going to never miss training. He was always there. It was always his first priority, you know? And I think that's, as I said, like, that shows the character of the man. It shows the level he was at. He was at a serious level.
Yeah, he was absolutely incredible. And when you think of Patrick Horgan's performances, particularly in a red shirt, what kind of comes to mind?
Kind of people have been texting me and stuff like that. And look, We'll all say about the Celtic Cross, right, that he didn't get what he deserved in the end, right? But sport can be cruel, and that's the way it is. Many great players throughout the country have been in the same position. But when you play for 18 years and you play for Cork in 18 years, you would say there was a time when you were probably guaranteed to get 2, 3, 4 maybe Celtic Crosses over that period of time. And I don't know, was it 4 finals he played or 5 finals he played and lost them all, right? So it's a pity, but kind of standout moments. I think we'll all remember 2013, you know, over underneath the Cusick stand when he got on the ball. Time was up. Everybody was looking at the clock. He shortened the wrists because he was going to be hooked. And it was an incredible passage of play, knowing that he was going to be surrounded very, very quickly. The Clare guys were there. And he shortened the grip, and it was like a little scoop up into the air. And geez, I watched the clips again yesterday, Rory, because everything's coming up now on your phone or whatever, on your tablet or whatever, right, you know? And like, the ball goes over the bar and we're saying, yeah, we're home. We've won the All-Ireland, you know? And then I'd say nothing about the referee and the time and the clock and stuff
like that. A lot of time to us.
But I just thought that was one moment. And then I look at him in terms of 3-10 against Kilkenny. I think it was a quarter final or a semi final of an All Ireland. He got two unbelievable goals that day. He caught a ball from behind the Kilkenny fullback. He was kind of caught behind his man, but when the ball came in high, the paw went out in front of his man, his head at the side, and grabbed the ball and turned and headed for goal and buried it, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, another kind of iconic moment in that match is, like, you know, I have memories of Kevin Hensley getting a goal in 1986 and Jimmy Barry Murphy's on his knees in front of the crowd in Hill 16 celebrating. This time I saw Patrick getting that ball. He was knocked to the ground. He was on his knees. And when he was on his knees, he took the strike and buried it into the back of the net. And that was part of that 3-10 that day. I thought it was an incredible achievement. Probably one of his best with Cork. And then throughout the Munster campaign, you know. I mean, his free-taking was meticulous. I think there was a levelling point against Limerick in the All-Ireland final, was it? Yeah, or an All-Ireland semi-final. From, I don't know, 70, 80 yards that he had to go back and take. And the pressure was just incredible. And I know people will say he scored a lot from frees, but he scored an awful lot from open play. He got an awful lot of goals. And the way he worked in the last 2-3 years in terms of he wasn't the main man up front, he wasn't the target man up front, he was still part of that six-man forward line. But the way he developed his game to become the distributor, to become the focal point, to lay off the ball. You know, Brian Hayes and himself had an unbelievable understanding. Alan Connolly coming into play, you know, winning ball, bang, the little flick, the little pass to a runner going through off the shoulder. And he adopted his game and he played in that role, which is fantastic to see as well. And, I kind of say to myself, my father played a bit with Cork and Tyne, and I come from a club that we pride ourselves in massive, massive tradition, but massive contributions to Cork hurling. And I go back, and I'm going back a long time, and I go back to the Jack Lynch, and I go back to Jim Young, and I go back to Dennis Collin, Martin Doherty, Captain, Kieran McCook, and John Fitzgibbon, all these guys. But, like, the name of Christy Ring comes up in a big way. Has been the greatest of them all. Uh-huh. I never saw Christy Ring play. I didn't have the privilege to see him play. And everywhere you went, the length and the breadth of the country, Christy Ring's name was always there. For me, Hoggy's up there, to be honest with you, from what I saw, what I witnessed over that period of time. 18 years, incredible, incredible feat to do it and do it consistently on a regular basis. And people ask, like, you know, and I'd be kind of saying to him, you know, yeah, Christy Ring had 8 All-Irelands, but look what this guy has done. You know, he didn't get his All-Ireland medals, but he contributed in the same way. His skill level, his touch, his left and right, the care he gave to hurleys, to his gear, to everything. I mean, he'd be looking out through the eye and have the hurley up in his hand and see, is there any bend in it? Is there any bit of crookedness in his stuff about it? There is. Has to be thrown away or give it away to somebody, right? And he was meticulous in his preparation, and that's what made him so great. And all the great sporting guys outside there, you know, you talk of the Roy Keynes and you talk of the Rowan O'Garas, and, you know, I mean, he probably was watching all these guys, what made these guys tick, and fellow Cork people, fellow sports people. And he says, I have to be up at that level to keep going. And I would have had maybe one or two arguments with him in the last 2 or 3 years in terms of my role with Glen Rovers. Would you take it easy? You know, go away. Go away for the week. Go away for 2 weeks. Go away on a holiday. Take a break. No. I mean, you're hearing after an Ireland final last year, 2 days later, 3 days later, 8 o'clock in the morning, this guy is in the gym working himself. And kind of, I said, can't you relax? The body needs time to rest and stuff like that. No, he says, if I don't go this level, if I don't keep up my fitness levels and I drop any bit, he said, there's guys there willing to take my place. There's plenty of talent in Cork. There's a lot of young talent coming through and they're looking to take my place. So I have to be another level above them. I thought it was an unbelievable philosophy for the man, right? That I'd done so much and achieved so much, you know? So he owes Cork hardly nothing, you know? Nothing.
And what's interesting now is that the younger players coming through that he's playing with have obviously seen him growing up and they've modelled their game on him and have taken aspects of his game into their own game. So he's directly influencing players that he's already playing with.
Yeah, look, and you can see that, right? You know, you can see it. You can see it. Look, I mean, he's struck great relationships with with guys all over the field, but particularly up front, because you become a vital part of a cog in a six-man forward line or a five-man forward line, and the movement, and that doesn't come overnight. You've got to practice that, and you've got to do that on a regular basis in training, and look, puck out strategy, you know, your forward play, your movement, two-man full forward line, and I think, yeah, it was brilliant. I think the way, as I said previously, Ted, the way he's adopted on that basis, right? And look, He's such a man, I say, he probably kind of said to himself, yeah, I feel now my time is ready to go. I think I probably feel I need to go now at this stage. It's, the only way he's going to get better is winning our Ireland, right, on the field to play for him because of what he's achieved. And it could turn out that Cork will, and hopefully they will win the Ireland next year, but he can't be faulted. And he has to take great pride in himself and his family, and he's grown up on the north side of the city, grown up in an area that is Blackpool, famous for hurling, loves its sport. It's his dogs, bowling, road bowling, hurling, anything, horses, everything that they pride themselves in. Patrick has become an iconic figure. And look, I think not alone in the north side of the city, or in Glen Rovers, I think all over Cork County and all over the country as well, because there are people that have kind of said to me, they come from anywhere to watch Patrick play. They were coming from the north of Ireland down to see the man when he was wearing the red jersey, right? They were coming down to Páirc Uí Chaoimh to see this figure. Is this the real guy? Let's see him in the flesh. Let's see him how he plays. Let's see, you know. And some of the points scoring off the shoulder, off the left hand, off the right hand, were just a joy to watch, you know, just a joy to watch.
That certainly was. And as you were saying earlier, look, it's obviously not the last time he's going to be playing hurling. He wanted to play for the Glen for another couple of years. So if you want to see Patrick Horgan play, get to the championships and the leagues next year. But when he does eventually hang up his hurley, I'd imagine he'll have a lot to offer on the sideline, be it with Glen Rovers or with the Cork team.
Yeah, look, that's the kind of natural progression you would think, right? And but look, I think for myself, I just kind of the personal satisfaction that I've made this decision now, and how I cope with it, right? That I don't, do I have to go to the gym four or five times a week at this stage now to get myself ready for upcoming Cork tournaments, National League? Do I take a break? Do I kind of go away and play more golf? Do I go to more horse racing meetings? Do I enjoy life more? And I think that's important as well, because he's given it everything, and there's a life outside of hurling as well, and there's everything that he can look forward to. And yeah, I'm sure in time, look, yeah, we'd love to see him back with Glen Rovers and concentrating in Glen Rovers now for a couple of years. And, you know, kind of Henry Shefflin, when he left in Kilkenny and he went back to Kilkenny, all the great players, when they've gone back to their club, they've said how much they missed it and how much now they're enjoying it, because yeah, that pressure, that bigger pressure that was on wearing the red of Cork. And it's getting more pressurized every year, Rory, because we don't have the success, you know, because we're not winning. And like, it's kind of sad to say the way it ended for him this year in terms of the All-Ireland final and that second half performance. But at least he put his hand up and said, yeah, it's time for me to go now, and I want to go now on my own terms. And I absolutely admire the man for that. And yeah, we love him for bits. We love him to bits all over, right? And but once the decision came from himself, I'm really, really pleased for that.
Yeah, 100%. So a few players, I suppose, get to go out on their own terms. Patrick has done that, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. He could have hung on and maybe just seen what was happening next year, but chose not to. But yeah, look, I'm sure if Cork win the All-Ireland next year, there'll be no happier man than Patrick Horgan up in Croke Park with his Cork jersey on, celebrating the Rebels' win next year. Obviously, new man in charge next year, Tomás. But like, the foundation has been set now by Pat Ryan over the last couple of years, and a big, big chance now for Cork to go on and build on that work that Pat has done over the last couple of years.
Yeah, look, I mean, people say, look, the setback in our All-Ireland final day was huge, right? But I mean, the funny thing about Rory, we're so close to it. We're just so close, and yet so far. When you look back in terms of what happened in that 35 minutes in the second half, and look, you're probably at loggerheads to understand what happened. I'm the same myself. I'm sure Pat Ryan is in the same boat, and his management team, a lot of Cork hurlers, people all over the country. And like, from the outside looking in, for people that I am close to, not of the players, like this had a massive effect on guys. Massive effect. Mm. I see within my own club, you know, Micheál Mullins, the two Downies and Patrick, having four represented in the Cork senior, and they're coming back to a club scenario. This hurt, and it hurt badly, you know. And some of the stuff that went around the social media, and it was a scandal, and it was a scandal to see. I mean, these guys don't deserve that. They're amateur players. I mean, amateur in every status, right? You know, and the level of contribution they're making and the time that's gone into county is frightening. It is professional in an amateur game, as they call it, right? In terms of your dedication, not alone going to the field three or four times a week, but off peak, off field training, what you got to do. And, so, like, yeah, and Ben is his own man. Ben O'Connor, he comes in and he probably has now looking to himself, I need to clean the slate. I need to push on. And I need to put my own stamp on it. Pat had his chance for the 3-year period. And look, there's a lot of positives there as well. I mean, there's some very, very good talent. And we've had the success coming through at minor, at under 20 level. And you look back in the counties that were kind of had that same level of success, they didn't get All-Ireland senior success automatically. They had to wait that period of time. And I'm talking about Limerick, and I'm talking about Clare over their period of time, had a very dominant period, you know. You're looking at Tipperary probably kind of looked at the trend and said to themselves, they've upset everything because they were only recent winners of an All-Ireland 20, right? And Demcal gave these guys their chance and he gave them their opportunity. And, you know, you go back to the All-Ireland final, you say to yourself, like, where did it go wrong? But there's a lot of things. And one thing that stands out to my mind is, like, you know, we had a Munster Championship campaign that was very, very tough. We had a Munster final that went to extra time and penalties and a lot of pressure in that alone. And then match was probably over after 5-10 minutes against Dublin. And then we went to an All-Ireland final 2 weeks later. So we had 6 weeks without a whole lot of activity. Whereas Clare coming, or Tipperary coming through third in the group, they get a pre-quarterfinal match against Laois, and then they get Galway, and then they get Kilkenny. No better preparation for an All-Ireland final. And they knew that themselves, Tipperary, quietly behind the scenes, that they were going to actually keep themselves in the game, be there 10 minutes into the second half, and then explode. And that's exactly what happened, you know. And we can't have any complaints. But look, and it was sad for Patrick that day, you know. It was sad because everybody thought that this was the turn, this is the time that he was finally going to get his Celtic cross and he could walk away proud. And it happened to Joe Canning in Galway. Everybody said it would be shame if Joe Canning doesn't win in All-Ireland, and he did care later in the end. But look, we got to move on from that. We remember Patrick Horgan as the person, as the character, as the hurler, and the man that wore the red jersey with pride.
100%. Moss Mulcahy, thanks for talking to us today. A pleasure as always, sir.
You're welcome, Rory. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Go Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next 20 minutes or so. And the latest from Munster's clash against Scarlets in their URC opener. Munster's 13 points to the Scarlets nil. So things going well so far. Long may it continue there. And it was also the opening weekend in the Energia All-Ireland League. Speaking of rugby, in Division 1A, Cork Con couldn't go the full way in their comeback as they lost out 27 points to 22 against Lansdowne. And in Division 1B, Gary Owen beat out our UCC 22 points to 19, while our Highfield did get the win over Queens on a score of 21 points to 14. Energia aerial updates are with thanks to Energia. Think of the possibilities. From rugby to American football now, and a historic occasion awaits in Croke Park tomorrow as the first ever regular season NFL game takes place in Ireland. The Pittsburgh Steelers, of course, take on the Minnesota Vikings in front of over 80,000 people. Our very own Rory O'Hagan has been chatting to the president of American Football Ireland, Alan Lomasney, I hope I pronounced that right, about the game, and maybe, just maybe, a potential game being played right here in the real capital.
All right, we are a week out from an absolutely massive, massive day at Croke Park as the Steelers and the Vikings go head to head. It's just an incredible occasion. It is going to be an incredible occasion, and I'm delighted to be joined by the head honcho of American football in Ireland, the president himself, Mr. Alan Lomasney. How are you, boy?
I'm good, Rory. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good, sir, and it's good to have you on, as always. Like, you've been involved in football for, I'm not going to say how many years on air, but like, you've obviously thought that this day might come, and now it's here. It seems almost like a dream that like a regular season game is going to be played in Croke Park.
It is. I mean, look, obviously huge football interest in Ireland. The fact that, you know, there's football in the UK has always been as close as we kind of got around this area to go to football. To have actually a meaningful regular season game in Ireland is just fantastic altogether. And, you know, it's all realistically, you know, the Steelers have pushed this because back in 1997, they played a preseason game here against the Chicago Bears in Dublin, and they've always wanted to come back. You obviously had Mr. Rooney, who was the ambassador at the time or later on, and he, you know, he's been pushing and pushing and pushing, and finally it has happened, and next week is the it's the big game.
It certainly is. We'll get on to the game in a second, but I suppose to take us back, I suppose, to the logistics and how like this has all happened over the last number of weeks. Because imagine like something like this obviously takes a lot of planning and preparation, meetings and all that kind of stuff.
It does, yeah. I mean, look, obviously, when the NFL has come into town, there's an awful lot of things have to be covered and bases to be covered and things to be looked into. You know, there's meetings, obviously, firstly with the government, because you have to decide whether or not this is going to go ahead. Then, obviously, there's lots of support from various other things. Sport Ireland are involved, ourselves are involved, obviously the GEA are involved because it's in Croke Park. So there's meetings and more meetings and more meetings. And you know, look, it's one of these things where I think everybody was looking to make it happen. So there was a huge desire for the game to take place. So I think everybody kind of put the best foot forward to make it happen then.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And as you say, like the Steelers, they had that bit of an Irish connection there as well. So they're obviously hoping to grow their Irish fan base, and I suppose no better way than to have a game in Croke Park.
Absolutely. And even in the lead up to it, no, this coming week, they've a lot going on. Like they're doing a kind of a media tour of Ireland with one of their ex-offensive linemen, Max Starks. They have their tailgate event, which is like they're holding a free youth clinic for kids on Friday, Saturday and Sunday in Dublin. And again, it's just an opportunity for people to come along that are going to the game, get interest, you know, get the kids in, show them what the basics of football are about. They have a Steeler shop. They open the Steeler shop for all the merch for the fans. You know, so there's absolutely lots and lots of things going on. There'll be lots of black and gold up in Dublin this coming weekend. Yeah,
there certainly will be. Yeah, and I think I saw a stat, was it during the week, there was like 20 million people will be watching this on TV as well. So it's a great opportunity for Ireland to put itself out there.
It is. I mean, look, Croke Park is obviously one of the prime locations to hold something like this in Ireland, and you know, to have that many people watching how we do things, and we're able to show that we can put on the show up here ourselves. It's a huge advertisement for Ireland in general. And look, it's massive exposure for our sport.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, I mean, like the boon, I suppose, that football in this country is going to get from this should be huge.
It is. I mean, look, we've been working with the NFL for the past couple of years on, you know, how we're going to grow the sport at grassroots level. A couple of weeks ago there, we had an initiative between the NFL, ourselves and Sport Ireland, where we've sent a set of football flags and a football to every secondary school in the country to, you know, kind of give them an opportunity to start learning the sport. Charlie Smith, who is originally from Ireland, who's now kicking for the New Orleans Saints, he has done some interactive learning for this package that goes out to all the sod. You can scan the code and it takes it to Charlie basically teaching you the rules of flag football. You know, there's some pretty cool stuff in it. And again, hopefully that we can start getting more and more schools. We had the inaugural NFL Munster Schools Flag finals take place last Friday in MTU. And Beaumont National School, by the boys and girls, won the Munster. So they will now go on to represent Ireland in November in the, or sorry, represent Munster in the national finals in Dublin in November. So, and with the opportunity for the winner of that to go and represent Ireland in the Pro Bowl games in the States in January or February.
That'd be incredible.
No, I was just saying it's just a, you know, it's a fantastic opportunity for kids to get a chance to, you know, to get involved in football and to get to see what it's like at that level.
Yeah, I was running past MTU on Thursday, I think, and I saw like flag football all set up there and they were all playing, the school kids were playing on the pitches in MTU. I thought that was fantastic to see. And again, it's just about encouraging that interest and getting kids to play a sport that maybe they didn't think of, and then they pick up the ball and think to themselves, wow, this is actually pretty good.
Exactly. And look, it's different. I suppose it gives kids an extra choice in another sport they can play. And look, there's a huge interest in the NFL these days, especially among younger kids. I know when I go into the schools there that you're always getting the, you know, there's lots of Chiefs fans have appeared during the last few years and Eagles fans and things like that. So, like, you know, there is a lot of interest. There's a lot of knowledge out there as well of football. So certainly, it's great to see from our point of view to be able to actually start working with the schools to get them playing the sport.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Just getting back to Sunday, like the excitement around the country is something else. I was looking at Ticketmaster this morning. There's a handful of tickets. If there's 200 tickets left in an 82,000 capacity stadium, it's an awful lot. Like we always assumed it was going to be huge, but for it to sell out, it's incredible, really, I guess.
It is, yeah. I mean, look, I think they could probably sell this out. It's a bit like maybe a Garth Brooks concert. You could do five nights in a row over this.
The players would like to play five nights in a row.
Yeah, I know that, yeah. But it's look, there is huge interest in it. You know, I know as soon as it was announced, all of our association were messaging me, looking, going, can we, you know, how are we going to get tickets? And, you know, we want to go to this. And it's great. And there's a lot of fan clubs in Ireland as well for all the NFL teams that, you know, hold their own meetings and watch parties. So it's great to see, and the place will be packed, and the atmosphere, I'd say, will be fantastic.
I was going to say, has your phone been melting just from people looking for tickets or just giving the old, do you know of anyone? Those kind of texts this week.
Yes, it has. Yeah. And that's been going on since it was announced.
Yeah,
I mean, look, it's one of those things where, like, this is like the golden ticket to go to see Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. That's what these tickets are like. You know, there's massive interest, huge interest in Ireland for it.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. And just on the game itself, when you look at the two teams going head to head this week, the Steelers and the Vikings, what kind of game can we expect?
It's going to be an interesting one, I think, because the Vikings are starting a rookie quarterback, and he's had, you know, been quite average in the first two games. So I think if the Steelers then in kind of on the flip side, their defense, which is usually their strength, has been poor to start the season. Mm-hmm. So if one of those can smother the other side, then it'll come down to, I think, Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers offense could put up some points. It'll be also interesting, obviously, because Aaron Rodgers will be facing an ex-divisional foe in the Vikings from previously. So there's a lot of kind of little storylines. I think it depends on if JJ McCarthy can get his act together for the Vikings and make a game for it. It could be a very close game, but I'd still be thinking the Steelers should shade it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to watching it now next Sunday afternoon. I think there's 7 international games the NFL are staging this year, which shows, I suppose, they're trying to promote their brand across the globe. I suppose the big question is, Alan, if everything goes well on Sunday, will they be back? Will the NFL be back for more regular season games in Ireland?
Yeah, I think, look, there's definitely an appetite for it.
Absolutely.
I would be pretty confident that they would want to come back, all right. I mean, they've seen the interest here. They've seen, you know, how many people want to get involved in making it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and as I said, there's lots going on around it that, again, lots of people involved in events and various other things. So, there is definitely, I think, a plan to come back already.
Fantastic stuff. And you as president, if you can get in the word of the NFL and say, come here, we have a nice little stadium down in Páirc Uí, would that work?
I've mentioned it many times already. I mean, look, as you can imagine, you know, we've tried to include Cork in anything that we're doing. Mm. You know, the 4 provinces this year that took part in the schools thing, obviously, you know, Cork was the first choice for the Munster mm-hmm. one. So I think, look, there's a huge sporting market in Cork. And I think once they start kind of branching outside of Dublin, obviously, when they came in first, it was always going to be Dublin based and Dublin centric, you know, until they got mm-hmm. the lie of the land. But I think once they start branching out and start going out and they realise what the interest in sport in general is in Cork and what a huge love the Cork people have for sport, I think they'll be heading down the MA at fairly sharpish.
That'll be fantastic to see. Yeah. Alan, come here, and thanks for joining us today, first off, but secondly, just enjoy the game, enjoy the week. I'd imagine you've got a busy week ahead of you, so enjoy all that and enjoy the game on Sunday.
Well, of course. Thanks, Rory.
I meant to get to my Premier League roundup earlier, but here we are. Ryan Bromelow with the full-time report from Selhurst Park and Crystal Palace win over Liverpool.
Crystal Palace 2, Liverpool 1. Crystal Palace have snatched it up the net, and it came from a long throw. Liverpool failed to clear the lines. It bounces across the box unchecked, runs onto the chest of Eddie Nketiah, and a two-touch finish is fired past Alisson. Crystal Palace 2, Liverpool 1.
And Man United fans, you might want to, well, I don't know if you can look away now, but listen away, if that makes sense. Alan Lewis has had the full-time report from the G-Tech after United had a disappointing 3-1 loss against Brentford.
It's finished. Brentford 3, Manchester United 1. Brentford get their second win of the season and heap more pressure on Ruben Amorim. Brentford were 2-0 up in the first 20 minutes thanks to a double from Iguago. Benjamin Sesko pulled a goal back just before the half hour to give United hope. After a slow start, the second half delivered a flurry of chances for both teams. Vandenberg went close for Brentford and Utara was denied by a brilliant save from Ben Dia. But then United missed the chance to equalise when Bruno Fernandes' penalty was saved by Kelleher, and you've got the feeling it wasn't going to be United's day. Matthias Jensen smashed home a third in stoppage time to make it a good win for Brentford, but the defeat will pile more misery on the red half of Manchester. It finished Brentford 3, Manchester United 1.
You're well used to it now, lads, to be fair. To Cork City, and we're all but relegated from the League of Ireland Premier Division after our 2-1 loss to Galway United in AM&DC Park last night. One bright spark, however, is our own Cathal O'Sullivan, of course. The youngster had plenty of interest from clubs across the water before his injury. And in a terrible, terrible season, it was good to get the opportunity to chat to him during the week at the launch of EA Sports FC 26. Enjoy.
Young Cathal O'Sullivan, how's the injury situation going?
Yeah, it's good. Flying it. Absolutely flying it. I think I'm four and a half weeks in now. Rehab's flying it. Everything's going so well so far anyway. So, just got to keep kicking it on, driving it on from now.
Is there any time frame when you'll be back to your
end? Well, there's a time frame in my head, which is probably different to the surgery's head, or the surgeon's head, obviously. But, not necessarily right now. I think I'm seeing him in about 2 or 3 weeks and I'll have a better understanding then of when I can come back running, and then it's all little goals to me like that. I can go back running and then the next step and then the next step and stuff like that, but it'll definitely be next season when I'm back anyway playing.
Is there a lot of people coming to you to want advice about the whole thing, or how? Even Roy Keane was talking about it.
Yeah, I know. You got a good laugh off it, alright, than me. There is, to be fair. It's coming so common, the injury and stuff like that. Sort of people, obviously, I've done it twice now. So, obviously, There's people coming up asking me questions on how do I do this mentally and stuff like that, and yeah, I'm just giving them the best advice I can. Like,
your future wise, is there a commitment to Cork City for next year, or what are you seeing?
Well, right now my main focus, to be honest, I'm not really thinking about the future. I'm just thinking about getting back on the pitch fit and stuff like that, and then I'm saying whatever happens in the future happens, but right now I'm a Cork City player, and that's the way I see it, and hopefully that's the way everyone sees it.
There's a lot of talk, is it tough for you, you know, in the media, or you know, people think you're going to Palace,
yeah,
you're being associated with these different clubs, is that an added pressure on you?
It would be a bit of pressure, obviously, to perform well and stuff like that. But people saying going to clubs like Palace in England, and there's loads of stuff on the papers, and when I'm just going in probably a Monday morning, seeing that in the paper, and I'm out training with Cork City, and that's the only way I'm thinking at the moment. Like, and obviously now with the injury and stuff, people will probably say, and I've seen people say, like, will I come back the same player as I was before and stuff like that, and look, that's my aim, to get back to where I was and stuff like that, and just the future, whatever happens in the future happens, I suppose.
That must be an added inspiration for you, I guess.
Yeah, obviously, when there's people out there that say stuff like that, it's obviously to prove people wrong and stuff, come back, and like, I don't want anything to happen to my legs ever again, hopefully, and everyone, all young people's aims, like players like me, your aim is to go to England and play in England at the top level, like, so hopefully I can come back and do that.
Was
like,
that deal very close to getting over the line?
I wouldn't say very close now. Obviously there was interest back when I was fit and stuff like that, there was a lot of interest, but I'd already take notice of it, to be honest. I obviously leave my agent deal with all that stuff, but I don't take notice of it. Like I said, I'm a Cork City player, and that's the only way I think of it, and when I'm playing, I just give 100% for Cork City and stuff like that.
Well, whether you want it or not, there's been, I guess, an added pressure for yourself being associated with Mealy and Noonan, yeah, as well. You're playing the three young guns from the League, yeah, of Ireland. What's that like for yourself being compared to
the two boys? Have had an incredible season, obviously. I know the ball very well, obviously playing through with him in Ireland and stuff. Obviously the two of them have been scoring goals left, right and centre, like Mason scoring two the other day against us. Like, no, it's good to have like something like that in the league, where you have 3-4 youngsters, obviously Owen Eldings, so obviously Sligo's flying it, 3-4 youngsters in the league who are just banging in goals, playing well every week, playing, competing against each other realistically, because when you see something like that on the likes of Instagram or something, where it'd be like Mason Mealy, if you call us or something, that'll give you a little boost to go out and play the game, you know what I mean?
Yeah, do you talk to each other?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, we communicate a lot. I've known Mason since about 15, so yeah, we talk a lot. Me and Michael Noonan talk a lot as well. So we're all buddies, but obviously when you're on the pitch, you're not the best buddies. Like,
what did you make of the move to Spurs?
Oh, I think it's a brilliant move for him. Obviously, what, it's like 2 million or something. It's crazy. You've said that to someone 2 years ago in the League of Ireland, they wouldn't have thought it, not a single bit. But yeah, what a move for him. Hopefully he goes over and smashes over there now.
Absolutely. Matthew Murray at Cork City, I mean, he's nearly establishing himself in that kind of category, you know.
Yeah.
What's he been like? I mean, he's been incredible every
time. Every time he's on the pitch, he's no fear in Matt. Great guy to be around. Obviously, I played with Matt since I'm under 13, when he came over from Spain. Didn't actually have much English or nothing. He just came over into Cork City Academy, William Kearney. And he was just, you could tell this fella's something special, like, and yeah, he's got his chance and he's after taking it now, and hopefully he just keeps going the way he's going.
Can you just keep a word for Liam Kearney, and we hear his fans about the incredible job he does, like, as a player, what's he actually like?
You can't thank him enough. Cairns is probably one of the most important figures in Cork City, probably in football, over the last how many years. With the academy from under 13 and stuff like that. Yeah, if you ever have a problem, you just go to Cairns. If you ever need advice, you just go to Cairns. He's basically a leader to all the young people. And obviously, Cairns had a great career as well with Cork City and stuff, and being what a player. But if you ever need something, or for, like, we obviously don't see him as much in the first team, but if you ever need something, you just give him a text and he'll answer a call or meet him for a coffee. That's what he always says to me. So I can't thank him enough for what he's done for me.
5 games left, time's running out, we all know it is,
yeah.
Can we do it?
Look, we're not mathematically done. I hate saying the word that we're done, because I don't think we're one bit done at all. We beat Galway 5 points behind only, with a game in hand obviously because of the cup. I just think Friday is probably the biggest game of the season. And look, if we can win that, I don't see why we can't. So that's the way I'm thinking of it.
Are you hoping we can put to bed the result last Friday against Pats?
Yeah.
And round across? Well, what mentally, how do you get over a loss like that to get up for a semi-final?
Suppose, obviously, the Pats game was like a bad day at the office. You come in the next day, you're like, oh, this is it, we're done, to be honest. But no, we came in, we were in the next day, we came in, and we were like, let's just forget about it. We go Friday now, this is the one. Already talking about how we're set up and all this stuff. So, in a way, I think we're already forgotten about Pats and we're ready for Friday now.
Okay, so, in terms of leaders in that Cork City dressing room, probably be list off who stands out to you?
To me, obviously, Shawnee's had a great career. There's definitely a load of leaders in there, like Greg Bolger and stuff like that, Shawnee McGuire, Rory Keaton. Obviously, the more experienced players would be very good to the younger boys. But yeah, the three of them, and Charlie Lyons, who's obviously had a decent career in the League of Ireland, they're the ones who stand out to me and help me the most.
Rory, I know you won't give it away even if you know, but any chance he'll be back for a pass there?
Keith. Yeah, in my opinion, I think he will be. Maybe last game of the season or something. I'm not sure. I could be completely wrong now. But all I know is that he's flying in his rehab and he's looking good. He's looking good at the moment anyway.
All right, that's all we have time for here on the Big Red Bench. Huge thanks to Cathal O'Sullivan for speaking to me on that one. A huge, huge career ahead for the young Glanmire man. That's all we have time for here on the Big Red Bench. Dan Casey signing off. Marty Kilfoyle is on the way next.